Boy, this is a group of people. I wish the whole world could watch you. And not just hear singing, but just life together. Oh, what are we going to do when we go home? Because the people who have not been here don't understand where you have been. And I must say, this whole day has been just one big delight. Well, I talked to my daughter in South Africa. And she said, Mom, really, it doesn't work bringing people to church. I said, really? What happened? She says, Mom, every time when I take someone to church, it's such a strange place for them. So I said, what are you doing? Well, she said, I've learned several sports where I meet people. And I don't really know. But I can't take them to church. I said, Anna, there's an answer to that. You know, that's called friendship. And I was thinking about, and Hannah was telling me all about this, was a long talk we had, and I was thinking about CFO. Just take this group. And it's hard to say a week before CFO starts to say, would you like to have a nice camp this year? And they will say, sure. Where? Oh, it's so far. How much does it cost? It's quite a lot, too. Well, I'm sorry, but we can't go. So I would just, like I said to Johanna, start to help people, invite them, have coffee with them, take them to your seaside, do some fun things with them, and just have a Bible study on Sunday morning on the beach. Start it. And then you just tell your pastor you're not there because you're building his church. And so it is with CFO. And with any type of organization, it does not just come. We have to do something. I think in Virginia, the first group that comes in, the first family, they pay for them. Every newcomer is paid for the first time. So after that first time, those people never leave. So there is such a good thing in that too. That means that we have to put a couple of pennies away every day. And then on the end of the year, you find out you can take one child or you can take a whole family, depending on what for pennies you have. So Hannah helped me today to just tell that to you because this is really, you know, if you have something very special, would you hide it? You wouldn't. You would tell every person. I went to a film, it's called Bella. And I tell you, I want every person to see Bella. The moment that this African, not that African, Jamaican woman sees her black skin and knows that certain doors are closed, and I see her in that room trying to pull off that skin, I started to cry for the first time. I had no idea how deep the pain is for African people or black people. And that moment, it touched my entire being. There are so many things that we can tell each other. I'm touched by people who are not easy to walk around here. I think about Anne's daughter. And this morning we were having this wonderful, thank you, quiet time in front of the cross and that beautiful lake. It's worth coming, I tell you. I was sitting there and I see Anne's daughter trying to come down. On her bottom, down the hill. Mama, mama, mama. I just started to burst in tears. Because Anne's daughter will never be out of Anne's life. But this week, this is a joy for Anne and her wonderful daughter to be loved and cared for and hoped for. I don't know if you really know that you have a pearl here, a diamond, something so beautiful. You shouldn't sit on it. And you don't say to each other, didn't we have a fine time? But that we can to say to other people, if you need something special, go with me. I tell you about it. Now you have a whole year in front of you, and it's a wonderful thing. Now we all have learned about humbleness, and this camp has been humbled the whole day. Have you been humbled? I had a humble experience. I had to humble myself. Humble myself before a person and just to sit down and we talked and we worked things out and we made it wonderful. And a camp like that is like a school. Don't let it go by. It's the most wonderful thing. But when I heard you say, Alex, about, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, this whole morning, it was like going to a show. And most of the time, we don't go to shows anymore. But this morning was a godly show. Beautiful how you introduced humbleness to us by telling about great people, not about yourself, but about great people that he met, and they took time for him. And how many times do we have people in our lives who have taken time for us to sit down with us? And I think that we so now and then can say, thank you. Well, I can do better as your thank you. Because Corrie ten Boom was always very, she didn't know what to do with thank yous. And when the film came out, she had a hard time, horrible time. She would almost push the people over because she didn't want to be blown up with all the wonderful praises. And it was very uncomfortable, and I could see that and all kinds of things. And then Cliff Barrows, bless his heart, he's still alive, he says one day, Tante Corrie, we always call her Tante Corrie, Tante Corrie, you need to do something with this. You're not very nice when people say you did a great job or they thank you for all the things that you've done. You need to learn to accept praise. Oh, no, Cliff, I can't do that. It's very dangerous for Christians, you know. She's Dutch, clear. And then he said, no, it's not. You need to know what to do with it. Well, I tell the people already, give it to God. No, that doesn't work. And so he said, and he had a bouquet of flowers, but I couldn't find flowers. And he said, Tante Corrie, when people say to you, like N comes to Tante Corrie and says, Tante Corrie, thank you so much for giving me hope on that hopeless day. Then she would receive from N a flower. And she collected all through the day a beautiful bouquet. And now during the evening, before she would go to bed, she would kneel down and she would say, Lord Jesus, I collected a beautiful bouquet for you. It's for you. Amen. Now, that helped because the people who said thank you were happy and Jesus was happy. And so I collected this today. I couldn't go to the flower shop, and I would really have done that for this man. But I want to give to someone who is having his 20th anniversary in this camp. Now, that's worth to celebrate, don't you think? Yes. So, Dana, it's your 20th year. And I wish I had bought some roses for you. Listen, a CFO who comes all the way up and down the road for a speaker and talks and is interested in a person's life is again a pearl. That doesn't happen often. So God bless him. Anne Frank says, how wonderful it is that nobody need to wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. Don't wait a single moment to start to improve this world. Well, I don't know where you live, or what you read, or what you see on television, but there are lots of moments there that I could pick up the phone and call. I remember, oh, it must have been 25 years ago, my husband and I watched a film, and there was a little stop there. And then there was the children's hospital. And they asked for money for the cancer patients. And I don't know what it did. But it touched our hearts so much. The testimony that children can go to an hospital taken care of. And so my husband and I, we just sat down. And we committed ourselves for life to pay every month money for these children. So when I see a little kid with a little bald head, and they're still alive. I say thank you, Bob, for encouraging us both to give that to that child. You know, there are moments in your life, don't let them pass by. They are so precious. For the young people, I have the hiding place in comic form. Don't take it, because maybe it's worth now $125. And it was only 35 cents. And then I had the privilege of being with Corrie ten Boom when we started, first of all, to write a hiding place book. And it was an enormous thing. For Corrie to go through her entire life again and to see her suffering through certain things, interviews that she had, and then the film. And I never forget the moment that we said, I need to stop a minute. Because if you look at Corrie ten Boom's face, then you see Alex's mouth and the cheeks. And I was sitting there this morning, and I thought, and the way he looks at you, like to Jay, when you do something, he waits till he has eye contact, and he smiles at you. And Corrie did exactly the same. And I was sitting there, and I thought, isn't it nice? It's like a gift that Alex is here. I had no idea who Alex was. He was very nice on the phone, but I thought he was 52. Isn't that wonderful? So Corrie had to go through the whole concentration camp experience. And that day, she was miserable. She almost couldn't breathe. And I knew that God had sent me 5 years before to be with her, to carry her through those moments. And I never forget this moment, being there with her, and to help her to relive the most horrible times in her life and tell all these actors. And it was an incredible moment. If you think about the worst moment in your life, how hard would it be for you to relive it? Where would you start? What would you do? So this is a little hiding place part that you can look to. Then Corrie loved the Psalms. She loved the Psalms because the Psalms told a story of pain, disaster, fighting, difficulties, jealousy, all kinds of things. And out of all that misery came praise, lifting up higher or deeper. Praise is a result of a cause. If David had had Prozac available, we would have never had the Psalms. If you and I are letting go sometimes, be sure you have a pen and an empty book and start to write. Because the experiences that you have, you forget. But when you can go back to that moment when you went through a difficult time, then there is such a joy to reread it again and to say, God was good in the midst of difficulties. Right? Where's our pianist? Piano player, you say now. She's in the restroom, so we can't reach her there. So otherwise I would give her a book, but that's fine. So, but she must have had some experiences. They were so enormous that she had to work on. Psalm 91 was Corrie's very favorite psalm. And she read that very often. In fact, when we were making the movie, The Hiding Place, there was an older man, and he came to us in Haarlem, Holland, and he sat down with Tante Corrie, and he said to her, we all say, Tante Corrie, Tante Corrie, I want to tell you something. I was one of the policemen, Dutch police, that heard your father read for the first time in his life, Psalm 91. Oh, remember those moments. You never know when it is the last time. And build memories in your life, because those memories will carry you through in hard moments, really. Psalm 91. Okay, let's look it up. I say that, and I know that you all have computers. You don't read this anymore, do you? No. Oh, you do. How many of you have still Bibles? Oh, yeah. Well, the young people, yeah, some too. Good for you. Because, you know, even in a seminary, most of the people are reading from their computers. And even pastors don't have Bibles anymore. They read from their computers. I still like this thing with Billy Graham when he had that old Bible and it flopped. You know, there was something in there. And a computer doesn't do that. Excuse me? What did you say? Oh, floppy disk. Gosh, you're smart. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. And then verse 5, you will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day. You will tread upon the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent. Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I always like to say her too. I will protect her and him, for he acknowledged my name. He will call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. And with a long life will I satisfy him and show her my salvation. Corrie ten Boom, and I'm going to speak on Corrie ten Boom today, and I tell you why, because several people have asked me to speak about her. They feel like so many things are lost, and I said, okay, I will put out an old book again and go to Corrie ten Boom's story. Who was Corrie ten Boom? She was the first woman watchmaker, licensed watchmaker from Geneva Helvetia in Holland. She was born the 15th of April in 1982. And she was born in Haarlem, right by that wonderful organ, St. Bavo organ. Oh, if you are a musician and you want to hear an organ, go and sit there and just have a marvelous day. Holland isn't very big. 14,000 square miles. Corrie had a great-great-grandfather, and he was a Calvinist. He started prayer meetings for the Jews and for Israel, peace for Israel. It's important to know that, because when you hear about the prayer tower and prayer life, you will say, I don't know that person I'm praying for. Or, I don't know how to pray for that person. Well, sometimes you pray for a long time for the things that you don't really know what is the outcome. Corrie ten Boom's grandfather started to pray 100 years before 1940, when the war started, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So it is therefore not very surprising that God answered that prayer. So totally different than I bet grandfather prayed for. But Corrie ten Boom and Papa and Betsy and Nolly and Corrie and the whole entire family got involved in the underground work. And many were young people from Haarlem. Corrie was a leader with youth, so she knew what the youth was all about. Father ten Boom knew everyone in Haarlem. You know why? Very important to know that what you are doing every day is important in the eyes of God. You never know if you need it. Father ten Boom, when he was a watchmaker, a clockmaker, And he had this wonderful clock shop right under their living room. And it's still there. And I know that some people have seen it. Father Ten Boom, he had to go every Monday morning to pick up the time. And you have no idea what that means. But you didn't have a telephone, a radio, or anything that was correct time. And so every person who worked in that business would go to Amsterdam by train. And with the train, you would go to Amsterdam, go to the center, and there you would look up to the clock that had perfect time. And Father Ten Boom would pull out his golden watch, found it, set the time, and he would go back. And when Corrie became a little older, that was a special time for her to go with her daddy on this little train ride. And Corrie and Father would have their special time. Fathers, mothers, don't wait till you have special time. It's sometimes while you work, and if your work is at home, or you have to do something, your children can be a part of your life. And if you don't have children, you have friends' children, or nieces and nephews, that you install in those children the most important moments of your life. Because if you are two by two, you can say things that you don't normally say around the table at home. And so Corrie ten Boom used those moments with her father in the train always as very important time. I think Corrie must have been about 8 years old. And Alex could tell that story so much better than I can. But Corrie ten Boom had heard from people the word sex. And she didn't know what it was. And in those days, she didn't. And so that day on the train, she said to her father, rather loud, "Daddy, what is sex?" And in those days, she didn't talk about that. So Father ten Boom said, "Corrie, this is my little suitcase that I have with me with all the weights. Can you lift it?" And she said, "Papa, you know that it's too heavy." And he said, "And so is it with that word. Because there's coming a time that you're able to lift that suitcase, and then you're also ready to handle more things." Now, that is a joke now for our young children. But in those days, that was a very important moment in Corrie's life. And then they would pick up the time, go back to the shop, started to set all the clocks, and then Father ten Boom would go to all the people who had those beautiful father's clocks and all the clocks in their home, and he would walk to every house and made friends for years and years. Do you know how to get a good underground movement going? You need to be a clockmaker. Because you need to know people. You know where they live, what they read, what they do. Because if you don't know that, it's not safe. So Father ten Boom did not know that he was preparing a whole army of underground workers. And you and I have no idea what we are doing in this world that later on we are going to say, "Wow, that is amazing. I did not know by doing that lady's garden for all these years what happened." So, Corrie ten Boom, what did she do? She started to learn how to make and repair clocks. Where? In her father's watchmaker. You know when she started to learn it? Under the table. We talk often about kingdom, people. What does it mean to be a person in a kingdom? I had today a young man that I had a bag in my arms and a blanket and things in my arms, and I stepped up to the first door in the inn. And this boy was reading his book, and he was only 14. And he stood up and he says, Mrs. Stamps, I will open the door for you. I didn't know what to do. That was amazing. That was so wonderful that there was a young boy who stopped for me, an old woman, and opened the door. Now, that was a wonderful gift to me that day. And I told his mother, because mothers like to hear positive things about their kids. So I did. Corrie ten Boom learned lessons underneath her father's table. Being in the kingdom, you have to learn to be a prince, or a princess, or a queen, or a king. Before I started to work with Corrie ten Boom, I was a nurse in the academic hospital in Utrecht, and all our royal family would come to our clinic. So when Princess Beatrix got pregnant, for 9 months, we had the joy of getting to know her a little bit better every time. And then she had a cesarean, so we knew when that baby was going to come. And then the joy of waiting. And all the people outside the hospital waiting for a prince or a princess. No person knew what. And then when it was a prince, after all these princesses, there was such a joy in the Netherlands. 51 years ago, Prince Willem was born in the hospital where I worked. I have still pictures from the queen walking through the alley, walking into the hospital. And then one day, the head nurse, who was always with the queen, then the princess, and she said, I learned something today. And we all would say, what did she say? Well, the little prince cried quite a lot that day. And the nurse had picked him up and said, maybe he needs to get some food. And you know what Queen Beatrix said? No, he cannot cry for food. But he's a baby. No, he cannot. Because when he is older, he sometimes have to stand a whole day without food. And so he needs to learn how to be a prince. And that started before he was born and now. And then I thought, who do we raise? Who is raising us? Are we really people in the kingdom of God? Or are we just a couple of vagabonds that know Jesus Christ? We are the children of the King of Kings. And Jesus loved to teach us how to live with each other and how to learn to walk the way. Today we had this wonderful dance, and I don't see the person that do all the activities, but she taught us how to dance, this wonderful dance. And I started to feel like a little princess again. Did you too? It was fun. And we had to look at each other. And it is wonderful. We forget all these moments. Well, Corrie ten Boom also learned under the table where Father was working how to handle situations. They talked a lot, but she learned one day something very important. The bell rang down in the shop, and his apprentice, Johan, he walked downstairs and he said to Mr. Stamps, there is someone important. And so Father ten Boom said to Johan, Johan, go upstairs and get the clock all in that one room by itself and bring it safely downstairs. And Johan went upstairs and he picked up the clock. And in that house, the stairwell is terrible. If you have size 11, you have to walk all the way on the outside. If you have nice little tiny feet, you can go this way. But it's a dangerous staircase, especially when you come down. And in the midst of carrying that wonderful clock that was just repaired, Johan fell with clock and all down to the bottom of the floor. And Father Ten Boom was the only one who knew who that clock belonged to. And Father Ten Boom, the first thing he did, he took a glass of water and he said, "Johan, you must be so shocked. Here, drink a little bit." And then Father Ten Boom walked downstairs. And the beautiful gentleman with his hat, his cap, he said, "Tell the queen that the clock needs a little bit more work. It will be ready in another week." Corrie was sitting under that chair, under that table. Those are life lessons. Those are the lessons that we learn from each other. Corrie learned during that time with Father that he could have been angry, he could have screamed at Johan, he would have said, "Get out of this house, this is the most important thing we ever did, and you knew it." No, drink a little water, you must be shocked. It always helped me when I start to be angry about something. I take a little story of Tante Corrie, and I said, "What would she do again? What would Father Ten Boom do?" He would say, "Here's a glass of water." Holland. Jews had settled in to Amsterdam. It was like a new Jerusalem, a little Jerusalem. And in those years, Corrie was born, and in the next 50 years. Corrie was 50 when she started her underground work. She wasn't 12 or 13 or 24. She had a life behind her. And so the house that they lived in was built in 1400. And there were two houses packed together. You have to go and see it. It's worth it. And first they lived all in the first front part, and then in the back. And then Corrie Ten Boom and Father Ten Boom and the family, they all would live in that house. And in that house also, several aunties joined, and missionary children joined. Mama was sick, and she died earlier in her life with a stroke. I think that's one of the reasons why Tante Corrie was always afraid to get a stroke. And although we tried very hard in the years that I worked with her, I would go to the Mayo Clinic and they would tell me exactly what to do. But when I left her, the first thing that they did was the opposite. And Corrie had 1 year that she worked very hard, and then she had the worst stroke. And so she had 7 years to let that pacemaker tick and live without speech. Little bit of speech. She loved to sing the old hymns. And stroke patients often remember old things. They can sing old hymns. So there was Tante Corrie. That was the end. But the in-between. Pray for Jerusalem. And Corrie ten Boom, growing up in that Christian family, knew that one thing was important. To answer that prayer of her great-grandfather. In 1940, when the Nazis came over and took over Haarlem, she knew that many Jewish people were living in that town. Children. And very soon, people were taken out of their homes. And then Corrie ten Boom, one day, she went over to a very dear friend. She would always, on Thursday night, go over to that house and babysit our two girls. And she had a good time with them. She told them stories about the good Lord and everything. She really didn't know who the doctor was and where he came from, or if he was Jewish. You didn't really think about it. So it was for Corrie very normal to tell wonderful stories about Jesus. But during the war, in 42... Corrie went over to that house, or it was maybe earlier, and she knocked on the door, and Martin came out and said, "Corrie, you can't come in tonight." And Corey said, did I do something wrong? No, 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 you didn't do anything wrong. But Corey, we caught today a note from the Nazis that the entire family tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock has to be on the marketplace, right under the St. Bafo. Corey, our entire family is here, all the children and grandchildren, and you cannot come in tonight. And Corey said, but what can we do? And these were the words, and I never forget them, because these are words that I don't want to hear, and we all have heard them. Corey, you are too late. Have you ever been too late for something? Too late that never can be changed? I've been once in my life too late. And Corrie ten Boom was too late. And she walked back to the Bayer, to the house where she lived. And when she got back and walked towards that house, she started to pray and she said, God, I'm too late to help these people. Now, I've done everything in my life. I've given my life to you. My heart belongs to you. Everything. But God, this night, this walk, I don't just give my heart. I give my life for the Jewish people. What can I do? And there is again what I said the first night, a dream. A dream for a future of people. Not for yourself, but for the safety of other people. And when Corey walked back, the whole plan was in her head. She needed to build a hiding place. She needed to prepare a place where Jewish people could come and hide from the Nazi soldiers. And by the time Corey came home, you know what? Father Ten Boom was sitting around that wonderful table and he was reading Romans 8 with the Bible student people. And then Corey waited till Papa was through and he said, and she said, Papa, can I ask you something? Would you be willing to build in this house a hiding place for the Jewish people? And Father Ten Boom was always ready. He said, Corey, of course, but how and when and who? And Corey said, I don't know, but we have to. And then she started to get the group together of underground workers. And do you know how old these underground workers were? Not older than 17 years, because all the older Dutch boys and girls, mostly boys, were in Germany. They were working for the Nazis. And so there were only this younger group. And when I see this wonderful young group of young kids here, the responsibilities that they can handle is much more than we think. Really. You can put them in the wilderness and they will get out. Even without a GPS. Because God has made them the people and they have to learn. They have to learn to get out of trouble. And not to just be on the phone and say, Mommy, can you pick me up with the car? No, how do I get home from A to B? I was talking today with someone who told me the same story. And it fitted with the story of Corrie ten Boom. So these young people started to build. And then an older man was the builder for the wall. And then another man had old milk bottles and he filled them with white paint so that it would look normal. And then the stones were carried in the inside of a big clock. For you have seen the film, you see these young boys carrying that clock. And when they come into the shop, there is a Nazi soldier talking with Papa. And those boys, out of the rain, standing there with a clock filled with stones instead of anything else. And then this nice Nazi soldier, his father was a watchmaker in Germany, turned and looked at his clock and he said, Mr. Ten Boom, what a nice clock. You can know how those boys felt. They would have been shot on the place. And then he said, what a beautiful work. And the wood is so beautiful. And it was only this far. And there were all the stones for the hiding place. And those boys, what had happened, they had a sign that was in the window of the watchmaker shop that they always knew. It is a Helvetian watch, a triangle. If the triangle was up, you could come in. But if it was down, you did not. And they had forgotten to turn it around. And so that was why these boys walked into that shop with that clock full of stones, out of the rain, and ran into this wonderful Nazi soldier who was talking with Daddy about the clocks. And then Father knew that something was wrong. And Father said, young man, I need to go upstairs to help my wife. He didn't have a wife. And I go upstairs to help her. So I'm letting you out. And so he let the boy out. And then the two boys, and I can just see two boys like you and another guy. And they would stand there and he said, Grandpa, Grandpa, why did you let that happen? And Grandpa said, 80 years old, I am so sorry, boys, 80 years old. He was a part of the underground work. He didn't mind. He put his life on the line, his whole life. So the end was okay too. And then they started to build, and then people were invited to come. Jewish people, underground workers. And the Ten Boom family saved many, many people. And there was a lot of work done for those people. They needed stamps. And we were talking today about lying. Do you lie during a war? Do you lie to a Nazi soldier? Well, why did you talk among yourself and talk about that? What is right? What is wrong? Some people didn't lie, and God protected them too. Not always, but I think it is just that what God gives in your heart to do. And if you need to get stamps for food, then you had to lie. Otherwise, you didn't get them. And if you needed a passport for someone, you had to lie to the police. And then Corrie ten Boom had to lie sometimes. And sometimes it weighed heavy on her heart. Now her sister Nolly never lied. But she wasn't a part of the underground. But she had some people in her house underneath the table. And it wasn't right underneath the table, but in the floor, under the floor. And in Holland, often we have Persian rugs that you put on the floor, we put them on the table. And when these Nazi soldiers came in, and they said to Nolly, that's Corrie's sister, do you have Jews? Do you have people in your house? And she says, yes, under the table. And so the Nazi soldier picked up the heavy rug and looked at her very angry. Don't you dare to fool me again. And he walked out. So that work, that moment, that she did not lie. She spoke the truth. They were under the table. So what do? When you have a house full of Jewish people, you have to train them. And that's what Corrie ten Boom did. She trained each one of them. They would sit around the table with about 8 or 9 people. And if the bell rang, and that was training constantly, they had to show the house as if there was only a grandfather, that's Papa, and 2 women living there. And so in no time, every person who was in the underground could clean that house in a couple of minutes. And by the time they went slowly downstairs and opened the door, those Jews were in the hiding place. And the hiding place wasn't bigger than the width of the piano and the length. So that's where they were. Well, when the real thing came, and by the way, one time, all these young people had to save Jewish children in Amsterdam. Some Nazi people gave things to the underground work. They didn't want to be a part of it. And so the underground workers would have a truck with a swastika on it. And they had uniforms. And the Dutch people can speak German if they had learned it, especially in high school. And so one day, they had to pick up, I don't know how many, 40 little children out of an orphanage in Amsterdam. And only the person in charge knew about that this was not real. And when all these people came and walked into that house and picked up those babies, the nurses who were caring for those babies, they cried, they screamed, they were so sad. And those boys took them all in the back of the truck and they drove back to Haarlem in their Nazi car. And that was, of course, dangerous too. When they came home, Corrie had arranged all the girls on their bicycles and boys as well, with baskets where babies could go in. And they would go to a farm or to people who were in a safe house, and they would knock on your door, and they would say, Anne, would you take this baby? And Anne would say, no, my children are grown up. And if you don't take that baby will be killed. Oh, give me that baby. Of course I take that baby. So those 40 babies were distributed in no time. But one day, there was a knock on the door. Corrie was ill in bed. And how the people came in was like a linen closet, and there was a lift that went up, and they crawled in there, and then they had to stand side by side. There was no water in there. They'd forgotten about that. And so when that bell rang, and Betsy opened downstairs, there was a man in the watch shop, and he said, Miss ten Boom, my wife is in Friesland, that is in the northern part of Holland, and she is Jewish, and she needs $400 to get from the north to France, to get out of Holland. Are you able to help her? Well, you never said right away yes. You never gave an answer. And so he said, I come back this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And at 4 o'clock, trucks were driving in. And a limousine drove in. And they heard the motor cars. And then a knock on the door. And Betsy had heard. And the Jewish people had heard everything going on. They cleaned out that house so fast, and all seven dove in the hiding place behind Tante Corrie. And the door was closed. And it took only maybe 5 minutes when the Nazis came upstairs to Corrie's room and slapped her on her face and said, "Where are the Jews?" The Jews were not farther away than one stone. They could hear everything. And Corrie was beaten in her face, pulled out of her bed, and almost thrown down the staircase. And then she saw what had happened. All the underground workers had been arrested because of this little thing. You see, it's the little things that can be important. That's why we as Christians need to learn not to overlook little things in life. Because one day it is important that you do what you need to do. That when you hear a child scream, or when a child starts to tell you a story that you almost cannot believe, that little sign will tell you alertness. And that's for every person in this room the same. I have to be alert every day where I live. I have to be alert to crying. And you know, in 4 years of children's work with camps, we had not had one cut. Because our prayers and be constantly training to tell people to be alert. You do it in a camp, you do it at home, and you do it everywhere. And we don't know what times we are facing. Have we learned to be alert? And then Corrie ten Boom came downstairs and saw her father and all his books and everything on the ground. Betsy, beaten up, everyone. And they were all marched into a truck and sent to the police station. And there they were, this whole group sitting in the police station. And Corrie looks at her father. And one of the things that Father ten Boom did, before he left his shop, there was that same Nazi soldier. And he said to this Nazi soldier, "Can I pull one more time the weight on this clock, on a big grandfather's clock?" And then the boy felt sorry for Papa. And he said, "Yes, you can." And so he lifted that one weight and wound the clock for 24 more hours. And only now do we know that Father knew something that no other person knew. That in that clock was a connection with the hiding place. And that when he pulled that the works from the clock, that the people in that hiding place had a little red light or a sign. That clock belongs now to me. Can you believe that? And so I have given it as a loan to Richmond's Holocaust Museum. And the wonderful thing is there that many Jewish people honor Corrie ten Boom. She also was honored as a righteous Gentile in Yad Vashem in Israel. But that clock, I had it in my house, and it became like for all the homeschoolers. They would all come, and we had lunch together, and we talk about Corrie ten Boom. And I knew it needed a better place. So now it is there. They sell all Corrie's books, The Hiding Place and Tramp for the Lord. And I often can speak there. They have my whole life story from very small. Everything is stored in that Holocaust Museum. Why? How did that all happen? Because a family prayed 100 years ago. The next family saved the Jewish people. And Father ten Boom, old as he was, climbed in the truck. And when he started to drive, they went to the police office. And they spent the night there. And Father ten Boom, by heart, read Psalm 91. To all his children, grandchildren, and underground workers. And the next morning, they were sent to the Scheveningen prison. And Father ten Boom was the last one who came out of that truck. He was too old, really, to get out. But he wanted to do it himself. And then when he was standing on the ledge and saw for the last time all his children and grandchildren and everyone, he shouted out, "Children, never forget, Jesus is victor. Jesus is victor." And these words stuck in all those prisoners' ears. Whatever would happen, Jesus was going to be the victor. And then Father died 10 days later. Corrie was 10 days in solitary confinement. Betsy was in a cell, but by God's mercy, both of those women came out of the prison and were sent to Vught, another concentration camp. And from that concentration camp, they were sent to Ravensbrück. I want to give you one short story before we finish. If you could look up love so amazing, so divine, could you? Yeah, thank you. So let's go to the end. Ravensbrück. Thousands of women died there. It was a work camp. And only by hard work could you get out if you stayed alive. every day they came up with things that would be the worst, what you can imagine. And one morning, and it was icy cold, November, December. And one day, early in the morning, the windows were broken in that camp. Each camp was about a half of this size with 600 women piled up together. The windows were broken, snow came in, ice was flowing through it. And that morning, when those windows went open and the doors went open, Corrie ten Boom saw what was happening. Normally, they would stand there with the clothing that they had, an old coat and a pair of old shoes. But when she looked out of the door onto that big place where they had to stand for hours, everyone was naked. Everyone was naked in the winter. And these were not beautiful bodies. These were suffering bodies. It's those bodies that you find on a pile. Even now, today, horrible bodies, dried out, hunger, and those bodies were standing in line. And Corrie said to Betsy, "Betsy, I cannot do this. I prefer to die." They all had to drop their clothing right by the door. And then Betsy said, "Corrie, I can't either. But you know what? Jesus hang naked at the cross. Because the word says, they took his garment. They took his garment. And among all these women, they started not to sing with words, love so amazing, so divine. It demands my soul, my life, my all."